You're listening to an IOE podcast,
powered by UCL Minds.
Welcome to the ECF staff room. I'm Elaine Long.
And I am Mark Quinn.
We are programme leaders for the UCL Early Career Teacher Development Programme. Why are we in the staff room? We are here because this is where the best professional learning conversations always take place. This is where problems can be aired bluntly and where solutions can be explored.
Over the course of this series, we will hear the voices of different colleagues as they come into the ECF staff room. We will hear from early career teachers themselves and from the mentors and induction tutors who support them. We will talk about all things ECF, the challenges and the joys. So why don't you enjoy a coffee with us, perhaps even grab a biscuit and sit down to half an hour of ECF staff room chat. Welcome to the ECF staff room, Louise Dwyer. Louise, it's absolutely fabulous to have you in the staff room with us today. I know you've had a really, really busy day in the classroom today. So we're inviting you into our staff room. We want you to sit down. We want you to take the comfortable seat, put your feet up, grab a coffee and a biscuit. It's my job to get the coffees organised. So what can I make for you?
Well, actually, I started this academic year with every intention of not drinking tea and coffee while I was at school. All good intentions. I very proudly went around school saying I haven't had a cup of tea or coffee since training day. I've only had one. That lasted until, well, it didn't even last until the end of September. So it is a coffee with a cheeky spoon of hot chocolate powder and a bourbon biscuit on the side. Thank you very much.
Well, I was going to say everyone loves a smug assistant head teacher, but a coffee with a spoonful of hot chocolate, did you say?
Outrageous, yes.
I'm not even sure our cupboard has such a thing, but I'm going to have a look. The bourbon biscuit I know we have, so I'll go and find one of those for you while Elaine kicks off.
I'd just like to congratulate you on that choice of drink, Louise. That's one of the best drinks I've ever heard of. And that's like sugar on top of caffeine. You can tell it's getting to the end of term. I know our listeners will be really keen to get to know the person behind the hot chocolate powder and coffee drink order. They're probably very curious now to know what lies behind that. So please could you introduce yourself for our listeners and briefly describe your role and what you enjoy about it?
Sure. Well, I'm an assistant head teacher at the Ellen Wilkinson School for Girls, which is an all-girls school in West London. I've been here for just over 20 years. So putting in the years. I've got a fancy title here, which nobody ever uses, which is Director of Teaching and Learning. But essentially, anything teaching and learning is me, plus CPD, and of course the ECTs as well. The thing I love most of all, apart from still being in the classroom, which I will also, I'm sure, talk about a lot. The thing I really love doing is delivering training. So I've got a team of lead practitioners who work with me, and we deliver training. And I think why I like that so much is the challenge of it. So teachers, our teachers in particular here, I'm very proud of our teachers here. They are so hardworking. They're so dedicated, wonderfully dedicated. And that means they're exhausted. So at the end of a long day, the challenge of being able to engage teachers in a CPD session, a twilight session, is a real challenge, and I find that really, really rewarding. And then the best bit, of course, is when you can see the ideas that you've shared in those sessions come to life in the classroom. And those hardworking teachers are actually really very generous about sharing that. They will come back to us and they will say when they've tried things. And I can be having a really stressful, busy day, and I'll suddenly get a text message from the head of PE about a literacy activity that she's tried in her lesson, and that's so uplifting for me. And of course, facilitating training for ECTs across four schools, for the Teach West London teaching school hub, as well, is is a fabulous part of my role.
Wow, and 20 years as well. You must have seen some changes in teaching and learning approaches in 20 years. It'd be interesting to talk to you about that a bit later on.
You got invited into the staff room, Louise, because Elaine saw you in action not so long ago, because you're a facilitator on our programme, as well as all those other jobs that you listed. And apparently I wasn't there. Apparently you said something in that session. You were facilitating a session on the curriculum, and you said something which really sparked Elaine's interest, which was that early career teachers these days seem to know more about how to plan and teach an effective curriculum than they may have done in the past. So that definitely is a really intriguing comment. So I wonder, can you elaborate upon that? Tell us why you think that. What evidence you have for suggesting that that's the case, and drawing upon all those years' experience you have, of course.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, it's a long time since I trained, and some of that comes from my, I probably should say it's more from my own experience of that, but also being very open about having trained NQTs for a while and knowing that when I started doing that job, it was nothing like the way I do it now as well. And I think, so I'm holding my hands up to that completely. I think that the early career framework itself is really the key to why I feel ECTs know so much more and are able to put in place so much more as well. If you think about the learn that and the learn how to statements, that framework around everything that they do is so clear. When I trained, pedagogy was something that happened at university. You did your reading, you listened to things, you tried to understand what that might be like. And then you went to your placement schools. And you wrote, literally hand wrote your lesson plans and your schemes of work. And we still called them schemes of work, of course, and didn't really think about the learning in the same way. Yeah. And then we tried to get through the lessons in the classroom, and that's what we did. And then the NQT year was pretty much more of the same. Or, the thought of reading or engaging with pedagogy sort of went out the window, really. But now the ECTs remain fully immersed in understanding teaching as an evidence-informed profession. So they go beyond their initial training and that connection between the learning that and the learning how is made a reality in the classroom. They can do that. They've still got the time and the space.
That's so interesting, isn't it? Do you think, is that a change that you think you've seen gradually over the years, or is that something you see as quite a kind of rapid, noticeable change over the last couple of years under the ECF? Or what would you put, are you putting this down to the ECF?
I think the ECF has cemented it. So I think the world of education, is evidence informed. There's a lot more awareness out there. The ECTs now are entering the position at the profession at a time when technology means we've all got access to each other, and we can share. There's far less hierarchy about being able to share ideas. So that was already happening. We were already able to see what people were thinking about education. We're already able to access that more than certainly we were years ago. I think that was happening. I said in the session that Elaine was at, that what we were doing in school and the key approaches we have to learning here, then when the ECF was published, it very much matches what we were doing. So it was out there, and people were thinking very much thinking that in that way. But it's just been so neatly framed by the framework.
So the framework is a kind of like the next stage in what was already a growing movement of evidence-informed practice, which was happening elsewhere in the profession. Absolutely. Maybe through grassroots events, or through, as you say, electronic means of sharing, or maybe chartered college and the likes of that, and people coming into that space and to Oh, that's very interesting. And you hear the teachers coming into your school, the trainees coming into your school, or the ECTs talking in a much more evidence-informed kind of way?
Absolutely. You know, I mean, we just wouldn't have had the headspace for that when I was an NQT, and even earlier in my career, but when I was starting to think about training other people in various things, the language that we use for CPD for all staff now very often comes from the ECF, because that's the world I'm immersed in. It gives me that language to be able to use. So, you know, the idea that ECTs now need to be focusing on things like where foundational concepts fit into the sequence of their teaching, comes from the ECF, and we do expect them to have that. They're able to think not just about getting through a lesson plan, but think about those deeper concepts, things like using and assessing prior knowledge and all of that language is now in everything that we do. And I think I said about hierarchy being removed as well, because of the high expectations that come from the ECF, I think we can expect a lot from our ECT. So if I'm going to use material like Dylan Williams' principled curriculum design in middle leader CPD, I'm going to use it in ECT training as well.
Sure. I wonder actually if what the ECF has done is more to do with elongating that period of training that new teachers get from the 1 year, which they always did get, mainly in university-based initial teacher education, but increasingly not solely that. And that, you know, teachers always had that 1 year of, you know, high octane pedagogical input, but then they moved into schools where that wasn't, you know, where pedagogy might have been an absurd word to use, you know, almost, you know, the unspoken thing. And now they're moving into schools where that language is shared, you know, because we've got the framework and we've got mentors and many others able to speak this language, and of course it's understood, but now have a greater language for it. And so our ECTs are becoming more confident in, they realise that this is these are words that they can use in their ECTs.
They can teach us a lot as well.
I think that's so interesting, isn't it? So it's meant to be a 3-year process and not a 1-year process, right? So that's really good.
I think that works.
I was reflecting as you were speaking as well, you, Louise, in a similar way, that it's almost like it's given ECTs this meta language to reflect on their practice that is a shared language. But a nice side effect of that I was picking up as you were talking, as it's increasing the voice of ECTs in your school as well, which is really nice, and giving them a platform, because often, you know, ECTs in a school can be seen as having a deficit. You know, they're the teachers you've got to train up, they don't know anything. But actually, it's kind of reversing that power imbalance a bit, that they're the ones that maybe have a greater knowledge of this new language than other teachers. So you've got some of those nice instances of people sitting side by side and learning as well, which is really great to hear. And on the subject of enjoyment, one of the things I really noted in your lessons, in your facilitated session, was you really modelled an enjoyment of teaching as a profession. You really modelled your enjoyment of that as well, and you celebrated and you championed the profession as something that is sustainable and enjoyable. Why do you think that's so important?
Well, I mean, it's a bit of a cliche, isn't it, that we all remember a great teacher, but we remember the ones that didn't want to be there as well, don't we? And it, you know, I mean, I don't know whether they thought that they were hiding it well, but there were always those teachers that very clearly didn't want to be in the classroom. And I do. You know, 20 years in, I still absolutely love being in the classroom, and I want to share that, and I want that to be very clear to the ECTs, even though that might sound crazy, but that's the long game that I think we need to be demonstrating to ECTs if we want to keep them in the profession. And I think, let's be honest, that's really what I'm talking about here, keeping them in the profession. I want them to see that they will hopefully get such joy, even 20 years in, and, you know, the way retirement ages are going, I'll probably be doing this in another 25 years as well, you know, that there will still be that joy to be found in it. And, you know, I mean, you talked about modelling it. I'm obsessed with the idea of modelling. We have an approach here at Ellen Wilkinson called Learning Aloud, which I created a couple of years ago. And it sounds really fancy, but it's essentially the Education Endowment Foundation's guidance on metacognition, amongst other things, guiding this idea that we should articulate everything we do for our pupils. And I just see that training staff, training ECTs in particular, is exactly the same. It's just an extension of what we do in the classroom. So I'm trying to model those realities. You know, the realities of being in the classroom. I try to deal with behaviour with ECTs if necessary, try to activate prior knowledge, being reflective, using praise, all of those things, because it does show, you know, the wide ranging experience that we have as teachers. And I want them to see all of that. A couple of my colleagues, when I asked them, you know, what is it that I do in training sessions, they rather embarrassingly gave me a list of Lou speak. So I'm generally known as Lou rather than Louise. They gave me a list of Lou speak, and apparently I do say things like I'm really impressed by a lot. So I'm really impressed by the way ECTs can so actively participate in reflective pedagogical discussion. And you know, that's the kind of thing that we want from our ECTs, but also it's the kind of thing that I need to be telling other people. You know, that there are high demands from the ECF training programme. I know that might mean that heads are perhaps reluctant to employ ECTs, but our ECTs are the ones putting their hands up first in training sessions. They're the ones that are absolutely, I'm going to get mushy, but they're the ones that are the future of the profession. And so we should be championing the profession for them so they feel valued, but also, you know, championing this idea that they have an awful lot to offer.
I mean, you talk about loose speak, and it sounds like, you know, it's a bit more than loose speak. It's the way that you very deliberately shaped a culture around that. And, you know, that's what I really picked up on your session, that it really fitted in with our high quality outcomes as well for UCL, because we think it's got to be more than just developing knowledge if we want teachers to stay in the profession. That's hugely important, the pedagogical knowledge, the fact they have the language, but it's also got to be about value and enjoyment and creating a sustainable, thriving workplace for them. Yeah. And it sounds like they're things you probably do very unconsciously and you don't even realize you're doing them or how good you are. But it, you know, I think we're going to move on to try and unpick those things a bit and think about how you create that culture.
Well, somebody described it as me having unbridled enthusiasm in everything I do, but I think that just makes me sound a bit like a Jane Austen character.
Yeah, you don't want to bridle. So Louise or Lou, you might be aware of this, that Ching Gu, who is the director of our centre at UCL, she's been leading a longitudinal study into the effects of the ECF program, in particular effects on work and well-being and retention of early career teachers. And we've published some interim reports on that, and we found two things, or at least there's two tentative conclusions that we can make at this stage. One is that the program does seem to be having a positive impact on our early career teachers, on their learning and on their ability to translate their learning from the program into their classroom. So that's obviously a big win if that turns out to be sustained. And the second thing is that the program by itself does not have the ability to completely transform ECT's professional development. It requires at least one other special ingredient. And that other special ingredient is the school leadership, the organization of the school and the cultures that they develop or they create around professional learning. So there's two things. So the program does have an effect on teachers' knowledge and their on their development, but that it won't be transformational unless school leaders can make it so through the cultures they create. So there's a big question in there, Louise, particularly in your role as assistant head and responsibility for CPT and teaching and learning. First of all, have you seen those benefits in your own early career teachers? And secondly, which I think is probably a tougher question, how do school leaders create those conditions for ECTs to thrive?
Well, I think, you know, I mean, I've said, haven't I already, that, you know, they're immersed, ECTs are immersed in pedagogy in a way that they weren't before. And I think that has a huge impact, as we've said. I mean, I think, you know, in terms of a sort of real world example, if you like, if you imagine the rich conversation that you can have with an ECT who you've observed, if they've already read a case study about scaffolding. And so instead of feeling like there's something they're just not quite getting right, they know that they want to do something with for their struggling writers, but they just don't even know where to start. If they've already read a case study about scaffolding, then they're already thinking about that, they're already using that. And in fact, the conversation you're having is evaluating what they've been doing in their lesson for that, rather than three steps back before that, if you like, which, you know, which is what you know, the position you might have been in. So I think using the ECF is a little bit like giving our ECT springs to run a marathon. You know, it's still a real slog to get through everything that they've got to do. But if they've done their reading and they've had those rich discussions with their mentors, with their induction tutors, then actually they're, and this sounds, you know, might sound silly, but they're bouncing into the classroom, aren't they? English teacher, I've got to throw in some extended metaphors there, but they're bouncing into the classroom rather than sort of wading through the tough induction years. And I think that's infectious as well. I think the enthusiasm that I hope a lot of ECTs have, because they feel well supported by the induction program, and by, you know, also by the fact that this is centralized now. You know, this is about making sure, although there are different providers, it's about making sure that the induction program or the induction process, however it's happening, is happening in a really validated way, is really reassuring to them. So they feel supported, they feel buoyed up by what they're doing. And so they can have all of that enthusiasm. So they are, you know, they're really valuable members of staff because they're enthusiastic, because they have so much to offer, and that really does rub off on people around them. And I think what's even more joyous is that impact beyond the ECTs. They're informed, confident practitioners, albeit, you know, at early stages of their careers with a lot to learn already, but they are informed. They are able to go and try things with the background behind them to do that. But it does rub off on people around them. So the mentors in particular, I think the mentors, with a greater emphasis on training for mentors, that's been really, really valuable. But the mentors working with the ECTs mean that the mentors become much more reflective about their own practice, right, as well. That's one of the biggest things I've seen, the mentors. Is it okay if I read a quotation from one of my mentors? So Jamie Manley, who's an English teacher here as well, in the same department as me, she's been one of our ECT mentors, and she said, "I felt very aligned with the educative mentoring approach, whereby the relationship is about being collaborative and equal rather than hierarchical. It means that both of us have been truly reflective about our practice and co-thinkers as well as co-learners. I think these kinds of conversations will really help to ensure that my ECT will make this type of reflection integral to their practice, and it is a welcome reminder for me to do the same."
Listener, I want you to know that we didn't provide that quotation for Louise to read out over the airwaves this afternoon.
I mean, it's gold, isn't it? It does exactly what we want any training, but any teaching to do. You know, that people are truly thinking about what they're doing, and our mentors are doing that. You know, and more and more, you know, as ECTs and their mentors use the materials that they're getting for the induction programme and share those in their department and use it, as you said, Elaine, the meta language, that's going to, you know, that's going to have a greater impact on everything. I use the language, as I've said, much more in my CPD. I know I'm a better teacher for having, you know, immersed myself in the ECF. I was teaching tone to my year 11 class last week, and mm-hmm. lots of different words to use to describe tone. And then the next day I tested their recall on them and noticed, in a way that I don't think I would have noticed before, that the words they remembered were the ones that I had very clearly used analogies, demonstrations for, which comes straight from the ECF. It's the language of the ECS. And, you know, lo and behold, it is real in the classroom. It actually happens in the classroom. I don't think I would have been attuned to seeing that happen in front of me without me being immersed in the ECF as well. So I think, you know, I think it has a huge, huge impact and, you know, is really positive for schools.
I mean, I think we can pause there for a second because you've said so much. I know you want to say a bit more about how you've helped create those conditions, and maybe other leaders will be listening very carefully to that part as well. But actually, you've just described a huge amount of professional learning going on, and you know, I did ask the question about how it's benefited teachers, and you were quite rightly, you expanded upon the meaning of that word teachers, and you've involved the mentors and the other members of their departments as well. I mean, it is incredible, actually, to think about that, the potential of a professional development program, which is, you know, call it what it is, that's what it is, and it's imposed upon schools nationally, you got to do something a bit like this, but that what it can do is have this massive, I was going to say ripple effect, Elaine, but it sounds more like a tsunami going through the Ellen Wilkinson School for Girls. I can use metaphors as well. And, you know, because and a very positive wave, a series of positive waves through practice. And even if it's just about, as you were saying before, Louise, that it's giving people confidence to use a language to describe what they've already been doing, possibly, yes. To mm-hmm. better understand how they've always been teaching, so that they can. And I you said something else, which I thought was really, really interesting. And maybe you can say more about, which is this idea that your ECTs know that other ECTs in other schools, even using different programs, not all using the UCL program, but other programs which are out there, are all doing a similar thing. And therefore, they're part of something much bigger than perhaps they ever would have felt before when you were an NQT or when I was an NQT or when Elaine was an NQT. And that's a really interesting, intriguing thought, isn't it, Elaine? You know,
Yeah, it fascinates me, and sort of the generational aspect of training and that, how that shapes your character as a trainee. Because obviously, you know, back in the day when I was trained, there wasn't any sort of formal program. And if you had a problem, you had to rely on, you know, the kindness of someone down the corridor to come and help you. And they often did. And that kind of happened informally. And there certainly wasn't such a focus on evidence-informed practice or pedagogy. So it's interesting how this is going to sort of shape teaching and shape this generation of teachers who feel much more confident to perhaps talk to something and hopefully, if we think of a second year of program, much more confident to experiment with their own practice. And, you know, the bit I found really interesting what you were saying was about it. You're noticing things that you weren't before, and people are noticing things they weren't before. And actually what it's doing is it's facilitating just excellent conversations about teaching and learning. And, you know, if you've got a school culture, I'm moving on to the second part, but if you've got a school culture where that excellent dialogue is happening around teaching and learning, then you've got a self-improving culture, and that is an incredibly powerful thing, I think.
And I think it's about the impression of the profession, isn't it? You know, we've let's face it, you know, recruitment and retention, such a huge issue. We do need to be pulling people in and saying, look at what a fantastic profession this is. You know, we are talking about highly skilled professionals. We are talking about people who are so incredibly well trained. And that's the image that people need to have. If we're going to keep pulling people into the profession, we need the ECTs to have that fantastic experience, that they will talk to other people who are considering, you know, that are considering the profession, that they will share that it is such a positive experience going through that induction. And yes, it is longer than it used to be, but for good reason, because that shows the value in doing it well. And I think, you know, it is very much about putting that on that national podium, if you like, and saying, look, we believe so much in this profession that we are going to make sure that everybody who comes through our door as a teacher gives our children the best experience, but that they as teachers have a good experience as well. My deputy head talked about us being the gatekeepers of the profession when we're in a role like mine and like yours, working with ECTs. And I think that, you know, that's a really good phrase, you know, and we love what we we do.
Yeah, and of course, I mean, gatekeeping is a good word for it, but you're doing, I know you're doing much more than that. And what you were describing before was this kind of organic process of impact upon ECTs and mentors and others. And I'm sure that a large part of what you think you're doing in your school as a leader is kind of just making way for that, allowing that to happen. So allowing those conditions to create themselves automatically, if you like, or organically. But I'm wondering if there's more you want to say about that, Louise, about how you engineer a culture or conditions for great professional learning to take place.
Well, I think for the ECTs, I mean, you know, in order for ECTs to thrive, there are all of the practical considerations, aren't there? Making, you know, very practical answers to that question, how, you know, making sure that they've got appropriate classes to teach, that they've got well-chosen and well-trained mentors, that we're respecting the timetabling expectations for ECTs, making sure that they can attend training. But I think it comes down a lot to values and respect, doesn't it? You know, it's very much about valuing the contribution that the ECTs have to give. And I think that's what we can do as leaders, is create a culture where actually everybody is valued. You know, I mean, everybody on any school staff, but particularly thinking about ECTs coming through and valuing the offer that they have. I'm really proud of the confidence that our ECTs have to, as I say, you know, be the first ones to put their hands up in training sessions. And, you know, and I'm not shy about pointing that out and saying, you know, actually, we should all be raising our game here, because look at what the ECTs are doing. I think that's the kind of culture you have, where you absolutely praise what is being done well, no matter where it's coming from, you know. I also think as well that with schools focusing a lot more on staff well-being, you know, we are seeing environments created where I hope ECTs might feel less overwhelmed by a challenging profession. It's no secret that teaching is challenging, it's hard, but if you've got an environment where staff well-being is high on your agenda, and ECTs know that, then, you know, they will feel supported and things like that. I also think that conversation at all, you know, all levels is really important. You know, we talk a lot about informal conversations that you might have. So for the inquiries in year two, you know, that conversations in the staff room count as evidence. And I think, you know, if you're saying that to people and pointing out just how valuable those experiences are, and making sure that you've got an environment where teachers have the time to talk to each other, I think that's hugely important as well. You know, talking about pedagogy through your teaching and learning bulletin, through examples like, I mean, we have Teacher Talk Thursday, where a different department will share an idea, things like that, that tie into the way that ECTs are working, mean that they feel like what they're doing fits into a wider professional learning culture. as well, and giving them the chance to talk to each other. I think the cluster, the way the clusters are working for us is really positive as well. I know when Elaine and Nancy came to watch the session, they were thinking about how we could make more time for revelatory moments. And I think that that's something for school leaders to think about as well. ECTs need time to talk to each other, whether that's in person or online. You have to enable that. You have to free up that time to go and attend the training, to network with other people and have those opportunities as well.
Well, that's about the fullest answer I've ever heard to that question, Elaine.
Yeah, right. That's brilliant.
No, not one bit of it, Louise. Not one bit of it. No, really. I think you were talking about really about making space, aren't you? So, I mean, sometimes it's physical spaces, making sure that people are actually in physical spaces so they can talk to each other. Mm-hmm. Those spaces might be a bulletin so that they can share things. Conversation was a word that Elaine dropped into this conversation, but it's really, really important, isn't it? That a conversation is a place where you get to test an idea, where a colleague might gently suggest to you that it's a very silly idea, or it's a great idea, or that they've tried it themselves, or whatever. But they can challenge you on it, or support you on it, or gently suggest you try something different. But you don't know how good or bad an idea is unless you've got somebody giving you feedback on it, right? Like a colleague. And if you can sit down beside them in a staff room to have that conversation, then so much the better. But there are other ways of doing it. So as you were describing, and I'm sure that's, and if you actually want to have the, if this program is to have the impact beyond just the ECTs, and I use the word just carefully here, if you wanted to have an impact beyond just the ECTs, then you've got to make those spaces available and allow those relationships, if you like, to develop across networks, to develop across school, well, within a school and across schools. That's just, it's really, really lovely to hear you say all of this, Louise.
Yeah, and it reminds me, Mark, of when we were thinking about the title for the podcast, and we called it the staff room, ECF staff room. But, we were really thinking about actually the staff room as a space is where some of the best conversations about teaching and learning take place. Some of the best professional learning isn't always formal and delivered, but it happens sort of spontaneously when colleagues have the sort of relationships where they are genuinely sharing best practice. And that staff room's not often a physical place in school anymore, or sometimes isn't, but it is kind of like a culture or a mindset. And that really linked to what you were saying. And speaking of staff rooms have notice boards. And we like to give every guest on our podcast a post-it note to write some advice on. And you don't have to stick it on the staff room notice board. You can stick it anywhere. And so we would like to know who would you like to give your post-it note to, or where would you like to put your post-it note on display, and what would you write on your post-it note?
Well, I thought about this, and I thought how brave am I feeling about this, and I don't want this to appear too flippant, but I think really what I would like to write on my post-it is simply to tell any head teacher who is worried for whatever reason about employing an ECT, that ECTs really do represent such a bright future for our profession, with the right training and support, of course, and there's time needed for it, but any head teacher thinking of employing an ECT should go for it. And that would be my advice, if I'm allowed to be a little bit cheeky about that one.
You are. So employ an ECT, and we will stick that on head teachers' desks all over the country. That's been done for you, Louise. Brilliant. Consider that done.
We're in the Ellen Wilkinson staff room, and I can hear your bell ringing, Louise. That means it's time to leave the staff room. I hope you enjoyed that lovely hot drink that I made you with all of those sticky grains of chocolate that I dragged up from the bottom of that tub. I hope the biscuit wasn't too moldy. You can take the rest of the packet with you on your way out. It's been really, really, really lovely meeting you today, Louise. I have a feeling we might be calling upon you again sometime in the future, because you've got much more to tell us I'm sure. But thank you ever so much.
It's been an absolute delight, Louise. Thank you so much.
Thank you both.
Our thanks go to Louise Dwyer, a UCL facilitator and assistant head teacher at the Ellen Wilkinson School, for sharing coffee and hot chocolate and a chocolate biscuit with us this week in the ECF staff room.
Please do get in touch with us if you think you would like to chat with us about your ECF experience. In the meantime, join us soon for a biscuit and a chat with another colleague in the ECF staff room.
And if you've enjoyed this episode, there's more where that came from. Search IOE Podcast from wherever you get your podcasts to find episodes of the ECF staff room, as well as more podcasts from the IOE.
And a quick favour before you go. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, we'd really appreciate it if you could give the IOE podcast a rating. 5 stars would be nice if you're enjoying the show. And that will help us to reach more people who are interested in hearing what the ECF staff room is all about.
Thanks so much for downloading and listening to this IOE podcast.